Welcome to Gruesome, your horrific true crime podcast. I am Meg, and my sounding board, Connie, is going to tell us about the Wolf of Moscow today. But before that, a little birdie told me that you wanted to start a podcast using the same thing that we use, which is Zencastr, because you want studio quality sound and HD video, automatic post-production and transcription in your web browser. And you can get that there with Zencastr.com. If you use the code GRUESOME with a capital G, you'll get 30% off your first 3 months and you can start a podcast. And you should. And you should send it to us.
You should.
Well, after the last Joachim Kroll episode, I needed to do something like a little less, you know? Still traumatic.
It was a lot. Like,
but just like less. Once again, Meg and I are doing our tour of Europe and of sorts. So through the end of this month, I believe. And honestly, it's a trip that we're probably going to have to revisit in the future because Europe. Let me just tell you, Meg and I talked about this before we recorded. You guys do not have the frequency of murders that good old United States does, but they're like a lot.
They're gross.
Like yes, a lot. They're
gross. I mean, in all fairness, the United States has plenty of disgusting, monstrous creatures lurking in its shadows, but
I agree.
You do too, Europe.
Yeah, you guys do too. And just don't let anyone tell you different, babe. You guys do too.
You're special.
Just like us. So tonight we're going to talk about the Wolf of Moscow, Vasily Komarov. And when searching this case, I can't remember what I was Googling. You know how like you always start like you start on Google like looking for cases. I typed in Y and I can't remember what I was where I was going because I laughed so hard. The first thing that came up was, why are there so many serial killers in Russia? And I was like, same. Like, why are there so many serial killers in the United States? Someone could find that out for me. That'd be great. So that was troubling. And I should preface this with saying, I am not like in a glass or I'm not like sheltered from the world. I know what is going on. I want you guys to understand we plan these cases out like weeks and weeks in advance. So I was already committed to this case before everything else in the world started going on. So don't come at me. Then just letting you guys know.
I mean, it is about a murderer in Russia, which things.
We're not political.
We're not going there. Just like us, you know?
No, we don't go there. That's why people love us. So anyways, Komarov, as usual, I am going to do my best to pronunciate because I really do try, but feel free to roast me like you guys love to do.
You're so good at roasting us.
Get some of these names wrong.
We're not going to be allowed into the state of Washington. Like,
No, we're not. No. So born in 1871 to a poor family in Vitebsk Governorate, which was an administrative unit in the Russian Empire. I'm going to give you guys kind of a geography lesson. For if you are like me and you're like, I don't really know what's going on.
I don't know. Yeah, if you couldn't give me a geography lesson, I would appreciate it.
His given name was Vasily Ivanek Petrov. He would later change his name, which is why I refer to him as Komarov. For the sake of consistency, that's what I'm going to call him through this episode. So this area only existed until 1924 when it was transferred to the Belarusian Society Socialist Republic. That was a federal unit of the former USSR.
That is a lot of words.
It's a lot of words.
Keeping up with you, okay.
Okay, so, and if that's wrong, again, roast me. It's a quick little geography search for me. Anyways. Alcoholism ran pretty like rampant in his family. It was a very big problem. And he was no exception. He was an alcoholic by the time he was 15. So I guess that he had a pretty big family, because a lot of the articles I read, like, they didn't mention his parents' names. They didn't mention his siblings' names, but he had at least six brothers.
Oof.
Six boys. Oof. Well, seven boys, counting him. It is believed that many of his family members turned to alcohol due to financial hardships. And like many young men during this time, he spent 4 years in the Russian army. Not too much is known about his early childhood, other than there were a lot of kids and the family had a drinking problem. So that's that.
C'est la vie. That's French. Sorry. Go ahead.
Wrong part of Europe, Meg. After his enlistment was over, Komarov married his first wife. He tried to provide a better life for his wife and a better life for himself than what he had as a child. So he moved his family to the Far East during the Russian and Japanese War in 1904. And I am not sure if that meant he moved to like the Southeast China area, or if it was just like the Far East part of Russia, because as Meg reminded me, Russia is also, by some accounts, considered to be an Asian country.
Like, yeah, it's part there. Eastern Europe and part
Eurasia.
And part Asia, yeah.
Yeah, so I am not sure. It didn't specify. He actually made a pretty good living there, and he was able to like kind of get together a small fortune. But the money didn't last long because he drank it away. So he decided the best way to make back the money that he had lost was to rob a military warehouse.
That's not a good idea.
Not in Russia. It's not.
Not but anywhere.
But hold on. I'll say that in just a second.
Okay.
But he was unsuccessful, and he ended up spending a year in prison. And honestly, from everything that I have ever read about prison and prison sentences in Russia, that really wasn't too bad. I would expect a lot more from someone trying to rob a military warehouse in Russia, because you always read about how harsh the prison sentences were or are. Unfortunately, Komarov learned that while he was in prison, his wife had died from cholera. So he's released from prison, served 1 year. He settles in Riga, which is actually now Latvia. As we know, the USSR as a whole underwent a lot of changes in the history as far as like structuring and countries. I mean, it's still going through a lot of changes right now. But when he moves to Riga, he tries his hand at love for the second time. And he marries Polish widow by the name of Sophia. Together, the couple had two children. And to friends and family, it really seemed like a pretty good, happy marriage. But if it was, we wouldn't be talking about this today, right? So it didn't take long for Komarov to return to his heavy drinking. And unfortunately, he wasn't a happy drunk like I fancy myself. He was a real douchebag when he would get drunk. He started to physically abuse his wife and children. And there are few things that bother me more than someone who drinks and gets like mean and abusive. We see it all the time in cases, and it just makes me sick. Even worse when people use their drinking as an excuse to like the next day, like, oh no, I'm so sorry. I just get drunk and say shitty things sometimes.
I'll never drink again.
Lies.
Lies.
It's gross. And if you know that drinking turns you into a monster, just don't do it. But I digress. So this is about the time when World War I breaks out, and when the German troops entered the Baltic area where Komarov was living with his family, he was forced to flee. So they settled in the Russian Volga region. During this time is when the Russian Empire under Tsar Nicholas II collapsed. And if you're not familiar with his name, he is known to a lot of people because his daughter was Grand Duchess Anastasia, which that whole story of the collapse of the monarchy, Rasputin, the legends of Anastasia, that could be a whole thing in itself. I actually fell into that rabbit hole. I hyperfixated for like 2 days on it because my daughter watched Anastasia and I was like, I have to know everything about the Romanovs. And now I feel like I do.
Do you? Okay, I'll ask you after this episode. Okay. Go on.
It's super interesting, but that's not part of this. So the rise of the Communist Party and the collapse of the monarchy, the Red Army, the White Army, all of the Russian history that you may or may not be familiar with. Like I said, I can't go in too deep because that's like this is a true crime podcast and that would be a history lesson. And you guys would be at me in the inbox like, we don't care about any of that.
So maybe again, for our next podcast.
Our next podcast, history.
History podcast.
Yeah, I would do it. It's my favorite. So Komarov joined the Red Army in 1917. He actually learned how to read and write during this enlistment. He was eventually promoted to platoon commander. And it's a little crazy to me that he had served an entire enlistment prior to this and he didn't know how to read or write, but I'm assuming maybe it's like it wasn't uncommon during that period of time in the world, like when he was first enlisted.
Mm-hmm.
As we know and we see it all the time in history and even the cases. For the longest time, literacy was kind of a gift to the wealthy. So if you were working as a young child, you didn't get the privilege of going to school, which is very unfortunate. And like we know, he didn't have that luxury growing up because his family didn't have the means. So Komarov is off fighting against the White Army. White Army troops actually ended up capturing him, but he managed to escape. And instead of telling his higher ups, like, hey, I was captured. Sorry, I haven't been around. He was worried that commanders would think that he was a deserter. And I guess to him, that was better than them knowing that he was captured and released. Like he didn't want them to think like he was a spy or anything like that. So he decided to just change his name and pretend that time in his time in the army just never happened. And this is when he changed his name to Vasily Komarov and moved to his family to Moscow. And honestly, this is where his story really begins.
So he deserted instead of like being a POW that escaped?
Yeah. Okay. Because it is not uncommon. And this is like kind of universal. Especially like back then, if you escaped, there was always the question of, are you a spy?
Like, did they turn you?
Did they turn you? And especially in a situation like this where it's like a civil war. So upon moving to Moscow, Komarov started working as a horse trader and a carriage driver. To anyone around him, it looked like he was just this nice neighbor, always had a big smile on his face. He was earning an honest living. But he couldn't quite break free of his petty crime lifestyle, and he would frequently commit small burglaries and robberies, and he liked to bootleg alcohol. 1921 brought big changes to the area. And Vladimir Lenin, the head of the Soviet Union at the time, declared the new economic policy, which opened a free market system and paved the way for capitalism. This meant that the area could have their local markets all open, free trade, you know, the whole shebang. And for whatever reason, Komarov decided that free market meant free murder because he really escalated from physically abusing his family to becoming what we're going to discuss because he really escalates. And for no reason, like there's no like sadism. It's nothing like that. Like it's not what we would typically see in serial killers. And I should add, I don't want to discredit the monster that this man was behind closed doors, because this wasn't your typical physical abuse. When his son was 8, neighbors stood in shock and horror as they realized they were witnessing him trying to hang, and yes, I mean literally hang with a noose, his 8-year-old son. His wife, Sophia, had to cut the boy down.
Yikes. That's crazy.
Yes. So even though some neighbors would describe him as a friendly, smiling family man, he would let that veil slip and the monster would shine through. So like I said, it's 1921. Vasily Komarov thought that with this new horse market and like he would be able to make a profit off of the people that were coming and going. A normal petty crime person would think, I'm just going to rob these people, right? The market was every Wednesday and Friday. This is very important to know. The end of 1921 started a manhunt that would elude police for 2 whole years. Vasily Komarov would go to market without his horses every Wednesday and Friday. He would wander around and he would entice buyers with the promise of horses or other horse-related items, saddles, you know, all the horse riding things that I
know. Horse things.
When I was writing this episode, I was like, what are equestrian things? And I was like, I don't know any. I know horses and saddles.
If you would have just said equestrian, we would have bought it. We'd have been like, yep, she's right.
Yeah, she knows. She's definitely a horseback riding connoisseur, that Connie. Just kidding. I've only been on a horse like twice and it really stressed me out. So he would bring them back to his house under these false promises of equestrian related goods. But that was never his intention. He would bring them to the house, sit with them, and offer them some vodka. And it wouldn't be a Russian true crime case without vodka. Chessboard killer. That's what he would do too. Looking at you. But as he was sitting there with these unsuspecting men drinking vodka and talking about the horses and whatever else he was promising, he would nonchalantly get up and walk around the room. He would hand his, what he called his client, a document to read over about the sale of whatever they were going to buy, whatever he was promising them. He had the chair sat in the center of the room. As the man was reading the document, he would sneak up behind them with a hammer that was wrapped in a tablecloth and hit them in the head until he knocked them unconscious. He would let their blood drip out into a bowl to not make a mess. He would ultimately end the lives of his victims by strangling them with a noose that he had in the room. Once his victims were dead, he would literally fold them in half and tie their arms to their legs. An investigator would later say it was like a chicken that was being roasted, like a rotisserie. Yeah, that's how he would tie them. And then he would put them in the equivalent of like a brown potato sack, like a trash sack.
Was this like a big dude? I feel like this is a lot of work.
But wait. When he first started murdering these men, he said that he would look for peasants he could entice. He originally would store the corpse in his wardrobe in his barn, and then he would later move the corpse to a location on Shabalovatka Street, which this is literally the street that he lives on.
That is a great street name. I'm so sorry to like throw off the mood, but wow. It again. Can you say it just one more time?
No, I said it right the first
you
time.
You did a great job. I'm sorry. Okay, go ahead.
First time. I like practice and practice. So let me recap. He's finding these men in a market close to his home. He's murdering them. When he disposes of their bodies, he's moving them to a different location on the exact same street that he lives on. So you're thinking like, Connie, how the hell did he get away with this for so long? To which I say, I don't freaking know. I don't
know. There's a lot going on.
There is a lot going on. And that's part of it. There is a high crime rate. There's a lot going on. Bodies were literally turning up everywhere in this area for almost 2 years. In total, 22 bodies had been found by police.
All in potato bags?
All in potato sacks. The exact same way each time. And I apologize, I should say this. Due to record keeping back then and like the economic status of which the victims were coming from, I really couldn't find the names of the victims or their exact stories. And I dove in deep. And usually I wouldn't do a case where I couldn't find information about the victims, because I really do think the biggest reason we do this podcast is to give the victims the voice. Most of the time, these murderers have big ass mouths and they give themselves a voice. So usually I wouldn't do a case like this, but it was so intriguing to me at such a high volume of bodies that were turning up. And police were like, wait a second, I think there's a pattern here. Like, it took so long. So
what do you think? What you think they hit that at like number 12, number like 16? Like, wow, these are all turning up the same way.
Well, so, and then, weird. Then they started realizing, wait, the bodies are only being found on Thursday and Saturday, the day after the market comes, like the day after they have this city market. Because he wasn't keeping the bodies for a long period of time. He would murder them, rob them, store their body until it was dark, and then he would move their bodies to a different location. And he wasn't going out of his way to hide the bodies that the police found, I should say. And the most respectful way that I can say this, he would just toss their bodies that were inside these potato sacks out. Just toss them out and just keep going.
And he was doing this at his home with his family?
Mm-hmm. That's something I want you to think about.
Okay. I will think about that.
Mm-hmm. He didn't do anything other than putting them in the sack to conceal what he had done. He was just like a, meh, they're... Like I said, I think due to the circumstances that were going on, like across Russia, across Moscow, like it was like a pretty crazy time period that he didn't think it was going to be a big deal. And I mean, for 2 years, it wasn't. In 2 years, police found 22 bodies. 22 bodies. Like, that is the span of most serial killers in like decades.
Yeah.
Police realized that the event was correlating, like the event that was correlating with these murders was the market. Obviously, this wasn't a coincidence, but even in 1923, police knew that they needed proof. And just because it was probable that the victims were being selected from the market goers, it wasn't solid proof. So the police started to ask around. They would just go to the markets and talk to people about what was going on, if they had seen anything suspicious. There was anything that they should know that would interest them. Slowly but surely, a name kept coming up in conversation as someone who would rarely bring horses to market but would always seem to leave with customers. Vasily Komarov. He was finally on the police radar. But honestly, police were not suspecting him of murder. He was on their radar because it kept being brought up that he was bootlegging liquor. So the police started asking around the neighbors in the area about this horse breeder who never sold his horses because they thought he was good. It's just a bootlegger. The tale of the, quote, really nice family guy, but you know he has a mean side when he drinks. He has a severe drinking problem. The story started to come out about how abusive he was to his family, how much his drinking problem affected the family financially, and even the story about him trying to hang his son outside of their house. Neighbors had reported to police that they believed Komarov was dealing in the bootleg booze business and that his drinking was the source of his domestic violence. In early March of 1923, a raiding party, which sounds super cool. A raiding party, like Raiders of the Lost Ark. A raiding party came to Komarov's house specifically to question him about him bootlegging liquor. And this is 1923, so it wasn't like they had a search warrant. They just started looking around. They went to the stable first to check things out, thinking they were going to find all of this bootleg booze. But to their shock, horror, surprise, under a stack of hay laid Komarov's latest victim from the night before. Bound, bent, you know, folded in half, bound, completely ready for him to dispose of the corpse that night. Can you imagine looking for booze and finding a body?
Like, wait a minute.
Like, wait.
This isn't what we were looking for. Where's the booze? They really just wanted to, like, confiscate it.
Police were like, holy shit, wait a second. This is the guy we're looking for, but it, like, this wasn't what we were looking for. I can't imagine. But honestly, because honestly, if the only thing you're thinking about a suspect is that he gets drunk and beats his wife and kids, which is horrific, but honestly, that describes a lot of men during that time period, especially if they had been through a few wars and like he had. Again, different times than today. So it wasn't entirely uncommon. But Komarov sees them from a window in his barn and he realizes, oh my God, they're going to find that body. So he jumps out of the window. And he was actually able to escape for, like, almost 2 weeks.
On foot?
On foot.
Did he jump on a horse? What happened?
He just took off out the window, just ran on foot, just like, do. When he was interrogated, so he was on the run for several days before being arrested in Moscow. When he was interrogated, Vasily Komarov admitted to murdering 33 men.
Just keeping a tally.
Mm-hmm. The only motive to his murders was that he wanted to rob them. He described murdering the men and robbing them as a, quote, an awfully easy job.
He's doing like one a month for two years.
He admitted that it wasn't as profitable as he thought it was going to be because the men that he would target were what he described as peasants, so they didn't have a lot of money. In total, out of all of his victims, he was only able to, like, accumulate $26, which I know
in 2 years.
In 2 years, which I understand, like, different time, but that's still, like, less than 60 cents a victim. That's not very much money. He ultimately admitted to burying some of his victims, which is why they were easily found. He took investigators to where they hid their remains, and police were able to recover the remains of six more victims. Six other victims, the final six, their bodies were recovered because he had thrown them into the river. And now, if you're an eagle-eared listener, you'd be thinking, she just said they.
Yeah, they, I did.
I know she just said where they hid their remains, and you're right. Because the bombshell during all of his interrogations was the realization that investigators was that his wife, after discovering what her husband was doing in 1922, so like he had been doing it for like several months before she realized what he was doing, she became a willing accomplice to her husband. And I will stand by this. This does not make what she did okay. I'll stand by that. She is also, if this is what she did, then she's disgusting. As well. Yeah. But part of me thinks that she realized what he was doing and thought, holy shit, he could kill us. Like, no big deal. He could kill his family. And then it became, I'm going to do anything that he needs me to do. So
keep it. Stay out of their sight. Words.
I read one article where it said that the police jumped to the conclusion of her being an accomplice just because they couldn't imagine a scenario where she wouldn't know what was going on in her home. And that is why she was inevitably charged too, which honestly also seems pretty on brand for the time period as well. So,
quite frankly, if there was that many bodies that she was helping dispose of, she should have been charged.
Absolutely.
Regardless of, I mean, yes, you may have been doing it to keep yourself, but you also could have went to the police.
Hey,
We're not ride or dies. Remember, just go tell them. Then
go tell. Like, no. Tell on him. Tell on her. Tell on whoever. Tell on everyone.
That's what about their kids? What were their kids helping too?
No, their kids are like children, like our kids.
So,
well, I guess that doesn't. That doesn't mean much.
Look, it's 1920s Russia. I don't know what's possible there.
I just watched Euphoria, so I know what little kids are capable of. So, yikes. This is a story that was, like, sensationalized. And newspapers were reporting on it from all over the world. And it's not like right now where we have, like, world news at our fingertips. Like,
it's grapevine.
Yeah. From, like, New York Times to Madison, Wisconsin, I was able to find newspaper articles about this case. Stories were reporting on the Wolf of Moscow. And while awaiting trial, Komarov attempted suicide 3 times. When he was unsuccessful, he requested a speedy trial and execution. He kept doing interviews with reporters, like, from his cell. And he said to reporters, "I am 52. I have had a good time and I don't want to live any longer." And I was like, you're a little dick for saying that. Like, I've had a good time. You didn't have a good time. You were having financial troubles and you started murdering 33 people. That doesn't sound like you were having a good time, bro. Unless
for a couple bucks.
Maybe you enjoyed doing it and you're just not saying that you did. But
yeah,
whatever.
What was the word from the Dennehy case? Moorish. It got Moorish.
Yeah. There were so many people at the trial that they had to hold it at Moscow's Polytechnic Museum because there were, like, people, like, rioting there. On June 7th, 1923, Sophia and Vasily were convicted of 33 murders and convicted to death by a firing squad. They don't mess around. And they wasted no time. When they were sentenced, it was ordered that their deaths would be carried out in 72 hours. Yeah. Which,
honestly,
I understand. Good. But yeah. The only time I'm like, because, like, now we have seen that innocent people have been executed.
I know. So it's just like in cases this extreme where we're absolutely 100% sure that this is who did that.
I agree.
Fine with it.
Yes, smell you later. Komarov said in another interview from his cell, "Well, it's my turn to be put in the sack now." And I wanted to vomit when I read that. I was like, "Ugh, you fleabag."
Yeah, that's awful.
But his wish to die was short-lived because both of them had a change of heart and they tried to rush an appeals through, but they were ultimately unsuccessful. And on June 18th, 1923, Sofia and Vasily Komarov were executed by a Moscow firing squad.
Together? Like, together. At the same time?
Like, they're like the first Bonnie and Clyde.
Ugh.
Poof, 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 poof.
Disgusting. That was awful.
Yeah, I just don't see how, like, that's a lot of bodies. That's a lot of people, like. And it took
a lot of people to show up one exact same. You never said, is this like a big dude that he was doing? But it was just he's getting help.
He's getting a little bit of help. Yeah. And I hate to say it because it's a really shitty way to say it, but he was preying on people that he was correct. Like, there wasn't a lot of fuss about if they were missing. There was just, like, these random bodies showing up. But there were also other murderers taking place. So it's just kind of chaos. The nature of the, yeah, it's chaos.
Utter chaos.
But I was like, that's a lot of murders. Like, that's a lot. 33.
Unfortunately, they never got the ones that went into the river. Will be probably a lot harder to find those at that time.
Oh yeah, because it had been, I mean, I'm assuming those were his first murders where he went to, like, more of an effort to,
like, bury
to conceal where he hid their bodies.
And eventually he did it so much that it was just like,
Yeah. Because he started, at first he would just, like, carry them, like, places, like, literally near him, like within blocks of where he lived. And then he would ride a horse and like take him like down, like through the, like around the banks of the river and stuff like that.
Yuck.
Mm-hmm. Before I get into the next part of what I was going, what I'm going to say, if you listen to this and you thought I could probably do better, Connie is not very good at pronunciation. She doesn't know what's going on. I'm just kidding. I hope you don't think that. But we really do think that you, as you know, like we've been big advocates for you guys starting your own podcast. Zencastr has literally made our life so much easier. So if you want to start a podcast that is easy to use, you can record remotely. Like eventually you're gonna be able to just record from your phone. You're not even gonna have to have a mic. Just like,
and it'll sound professional. It'll sound studio quality.
Yeah, because we have at times recorded, we thought we were recording from our mics and it's been like we've messed up or we've restarted something and it's been like our webcam mic. And we have really nice mics and you really can't tell a difference. Like before you used to be able to, because we'd done it before. We love them so much. We probably wouldn't even be here without them because it was getting pretty difficult in the beginning to get our shit together. So if you want to start a podcast and you want the ease of being able to have most of your editing done right from post-production, I mean, it removes long pauses, it automatically levels. So it's so simple.
You could start a podcast about all the gross European murderers.
You should, because there's a lot of them.
Do it.
There's a lot of them. Go to Zencastr, ZENCASTR.com/pricing. Feel free to use the promo code GRUESOME with a capital G for 30% off your first 3 months. And again, So, okay. Now, one of our listeners / like Instagram followers had mentioned that after cases, we should do like a lighter story to end on. And I loved the idea so much. Loved it. I was like a little annoyed we hadn't thought about it before. Cause like, that's awesome. So, because this case wasn't as like brutal, but you hear us like at the end
it's
of
pretty
like,
brutal.
Yeah. I mean, but like you hear us at the end of like really heavy cases where we're like, woof, like we don't really know like where to go after. Yeah, we don't
want to talk anymore.
Yeah. So here goes the first of many feel good follow-ups. Students at Westside Elementary and Healdsburg, California, probably showed up for their community. They launched a hotline recording program called Pep Talk, P-E-P-T-O-C, and adorbs. I love a good pun. Pep Talk is a free hotline created by the students with the help of their teachers, Jessica Martin and Ashra Weiss. Martin told NPR, I thought you know, with the world being as it is, we all really needed to hear from them, their extraordinary advice and their continual joy. So students recorded messages for different situations. You can press 1 if you're feeling mad, frustrated, or nervous. Press 2 if you just need like encouragement or life advice. For a pep talk from kindergarteners, you can press 3. And to hear kids laughing with delight, like you can call and just listen to kids laughing.
What's the number? I'm going to call it.
707.
Okay.
998-8410.
Okay, hold on.
Boop. Speakerphone.
Hi, welcome to Pep Talk, a public art project by Westside School.
Bienvenidos a Pep Talk, un proyecto creado por los estudiantes de Westside School.
Para un mensaje feliz, presiona 5.
Please listen to the following options for encouraging messages. If you're feeling mad, frustrated, or nervous, press 1. If you need it, words of encouragement and life advice, press 2.
I think
press
2. We're going to go 2.
Be grateful for yourself. Dude, live it up. Be you. I trust that you can make things right.
Aww.
Be happy. Try it again. Believe in yourself. If you're feeling up high and unbalanced, think of groundhogs. Always stay together. Don't give up, power through. We all really like you. Never back down, never give up.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm getting teary-eyed, so I'm going to stop that. I'm like, must be emotional tonight or something, because I was like, oh no, I feel him in my eyeballs.
Yeah,
well, that was very cute.
It's very cute and wholesome, and I really don't think there's anything like better than listening to kids like give you a pep talk. So
that was cute. That
and as I'm like,
feel a little better.
Like as I'm like teary-eyed.
I know, I did too. Oh man,
I think like what it is. As a parent, you know that our kids are literally going to change the world. Like, they're going to change humanity. It's literally what – I'm, like, literally over here crying.
Get it together. Jeez.
It helps me sleep at night. Like, I think of, like, problems that I faced as a kid and, like, you know, just – our kids don't think about it. We are raising, and I say we as like our listeners as well, and I hope you are part of this we, the royal we. We are raising our kids to be like more accepting, more caring, more kind, like less sexist, like, you know, more just
more. It's more that, but also like less willing to take that same bullshit. Like
exactly.
More like accepting while also being willing to call people out on their
yes. And it's like
ridiculousness.
It's so great. It's literally the only thing that is keeping me like from losing my shit with everything that's going on in the world. Knowing that I just see the wholesomeness. I watch my older boys, like I watch them play with their friends, and they're just like, they're just so accepting. And I think it's because I was so bullied like growing up, like for just stupid shit. And I see like that's, because, like, I talk to him, like, I talk about bullying. And, like, look, I know it's still an issue. Like, I know that there's not, like, this world of bubblegum and rainbows where no kid is having any problems. Like, I know that that's not true. But I like to believe that the majority of parents are raising their kids to be kind, beautiful, accepting individuals. And I'm here for it.
Unless you're not, then.
Fuck off.
No, that sandwich.
And that was your feel-good follow-up. Which now I feel good.
I do feel good. Yeah, that was really adorable.
I know this is like a real, I know this was like a shorter episode, but I'll be honest, some of the other cases I was like researching, I was like, I can't do another one this close. Like,
man, I was reading the news this week just in general, and there is a lot of really gross like murders happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and there were a lot of kids in the news this week, and I mean, we talk about a lot that we don't always
yeah defend. And that's a lot of the ones I was coming across. Like, I was coming across a lot of cases that heavily involved children, and I was like, you know what, I'll take one on the nose for someone being like, this wasn't as good of an episode. I just couldn't do another kid case, and honestly, like, at least like not right now. And I know our listeners are feeling like that too, because we our patrons get to vote on our bonus case every month. And one of the comments was like, I voted for this one because it didn't sound as brutal as the other one and because I need a break. And I was like, all right.
And then someone else like was like, yep, me too. Same. So
and I was like, okay, I needed to do. I mean, it's still
same
sucks.
Page.
Like in the grand scheme, 33 men who like, it saddens me that people were like, the news were like, oh, just 33 random men, like that enough. I'm like, Jesus Christ, like these people's families, they probably, there is a woman who just thought her husband ran off or was just like, oh, he's going to market. Something happened. Like,
ugh. What a crazy time that like, that's what you had to believe. Like if mm-hmm. you didn't hear from your loved one, it was just like, oh, they just ran off.
Yeah.
That's normal.
But no. It happened a lot, too, like in the United States during the Great Depression. Like men who felt like they couldn't provide for their families would just be like, see ya. I can't. I'm sorry.
I'm going to make this worse.
I'm going to make this worse. But women did it, too. Women would be like, this is too much. And they would just drop their kids off like wherever.
Well aware. Oh, oof. Man.
Oof.
Oof.
But yeah, that's all I have this week. It hasn't been like a very, I was trying to think if I have anything big to talk about, but I'm like, there's just too much bad stuff going on in the world. So I don't really know a lot of, I've been trying to stay off the news, and
it's my finals week. So I have nothing unless you really want to learn like about periodontology, which I don't think you do.
We've talked about teeth, and that's the one thing that,
my oldest daughter did lose tooth number 4, though, and that was cool. I was excited.
Do you keep her teeth?
Yes.
You're one of them, aren't you? You're a tooth collector.
I don't know if you ever saw the YouTube video where, like, the woman, like, bakes them in the oven to make them white and, like, turns them into a necklace. I'm never going to be that woman, but yes, I do have the 4 teeth that she has lost so far. And my mom also kept my teeth. Like, she had them in like a little like pill bottle.
Yeah, my mom kept my teeth. And as I became an adult, I was like, it's weird. Weird.
They're just so little and cute.
I know. But do you know what happens when my kids lose their teeth? I throw it away.
You throw it in the trash.
Just zoop.
If you plant it, a new kid will grow.
I don't want any more kids. I'll burn it.
Don't bake it. It'll just turn it more white. Yeah, that's a weird video. I got to find that to show you. And she's like selling it. It's so strange. She's selling it as like this new kind of like DIY craft you can do. And look, it makes a beautiful necklace when you're done. I'm like, do not wear your children's teeth as like a fashion statement.
Well, like, I will say this.
You know the Victorian like hair lockets?
Well, that's the one thing I have in the baby book. It's like taped in there. It's like their first
lock of hair. Yeah.
But I think it's actually like their 5th or 6th haircut, because I was always like, oh shit, I'm supposed to keep that. And then I would lose it because it's who I am.
Because it's hair.
The only thing that I have kept, and my husband hates it, like hates it, is the last time I pumped with my daughter, and I have a little tiny tube of my breast milk out in the freezer, just like hanging out. I was gonna make like a ring. Yeah,
turn it into like the resin like mm-hmm. necklace or something. Those are kind of cool.
And I just kept it because like it was such a long journey, and I was really proud of it. Not because of her, but because it was like me. I was like, I did this.
I'm proud of me.
So I didn't keep it to be like, here you go, daughter. Here's the breast milk I pumped you.
In case you're thirsty in a couple of years.
But I kept it thinking like she would have this rash one day that I would need to rub on it, like all of the mommy blogs said, but she never did. So I just kept it, and then I couldn't get rid of it because I kind of was like, oh, this is my, I've moved 3 times with that breast milk.
Oh, you have?
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But not the teeth though. Although sometimes I'll put them up, like to toss them, and I'll find them again. And then I'm like, oh.
This is frightening.
That's a molar. Whose tooth is this?
Scotty texted me a picture. Her oldest son lost one of his molars. And she sent me a picture, and she was like, is this a permanent tooth? And they're big. Like, they are really large. I was like, that's not a permanent tooth, but it looks disgusting. So I understand why you were alarmed. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that was a secondhand picture. I got it as they were at the movies, and it was, he just lost his tooth. We think it's a permanent tooth. And I was like, wait a second. What?
Like, what's the age where you stop like keeping track of that? Where you're just like, I don't know how many teeth you've lost at this point.
Let me tell you.
The front 11. Ones are gone.
Yeah, because I have no fucking idea. He could come to me with all of his teeth gone, and I'd be like, wait, which ones were your permanent teeth? Which ones? Should I be worried about this? My daughter knew that I hated teeth so much. She just didn't grow one. So waiting on that. See how that's going to pan out. Come back in a few years.
It'll be fine. It'll be
I may fine. Need to take up donations for an implant.
No, it's going to be great. She's just missing one of her lateral incisors, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just teeth her.
They are the most common tooth. That's a fun fact I can tell you guys. The most commonly, like, malformed tooth in your mouth or not formed tooth is your lateral incisor. So the ones right now on your upper jaw.
Fun fact. Not really fun fact. Do you, if you're married or in relationships and you start to procreate with your spouse, do you ever realize there are things about their family, like things that you just wish they would have told you that could have been passed down? Like, as I'm talking about my daughter, I'm like, I think she's missing this tooth. And my mother-in-law's like, oh yeah, probably. I didn't have it. My brother-in-law didn't have it. And I was like, really? How is this not something that has been said to me? Like,
look, and your mother-in-law's fine. You can't even tell.
No, but she has a, like, she had to get a bridge because of it to make it all look the same. And I know what he's, like, my father-in-law spent on that. And it's like, cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. So.
Oh, that's crazy. Wow. Mm-hmm. So it's like a family thing that was passed down. Interesting. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm going to have to let her know and let her husband know one day. Like, hey.
Like, as they're getting ready to walk down the aisle, you can be like,
psst, your kid's going to be missing teeth. But the dental insurance, man.
That's awesome.
Well, I hope you enjoyed our – we're like, we're going to get off here. Oh, let me tell you all about our kid's teeth.
Yeah. Shout out to the lady who asked us to stop giggling so much.
Yeah, we have this message. And if you're listening to us right now and you're who sent this message, like, this is you. We're talking about you. It made us
giggle even harder.
It was like, can you stop giggling? It's very frustrating. And I was like because I don't feel like you giggle during the cases. Like, I'm not laughing as I'm talking about these murders that are going on. Like
sometimes maybe it's in the digressions.
In the digression. Oh. But, like, not describing the murder, not discussing the victims. I am not laughing. You are not laughing. Like, that's rude. And people who do that are shitty people. But we don't do that. Do the funny stuff afterwards or even a little before. Do the digressions. Is it a little chuckle? Yes.
When you sent me a picture of that one, that it killed me. I was like, that's the best. I will not.
Yeah. And to think
I will not be doing that.
To think to myself, I never have ever felt like my opinion was important enough to, like, reach out to be like, you should stop doing something that you love and the way you do it that you love because I don't like it.
I'd just be like, I don't like this that much. I'm not going to listen to it anymore.
Yeah. But like to be driving home in rush hour and be like,
they're giggling an awful lot.
And I'm frustrated.
Just made my giggling even more chaotic, if anything.
Yeah, we laughed at you. Like, if you're listening, we laughed. Because I have fun. Like, this is fun.
I think we could probably leave it on that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to Gruesome, Horrific, True Crime, a Zencastr-powered podcast. Seriously, we wouldn't be here without them. Zencastr is simple to use and makes it easy to edit your own podcast. Zencastr gives you automatic, high-quality post-production sound, transcription, and HD video recordings of all of your episodes. If you want to start a podcast, and we think you should, click the link in the show notes or at our website and use the code GRUESOME with a capital G for 30% off your first 3 months.
We love you, beautiful strangers. And if you love us too, here are some ways that you can support Gruesome. Please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or a 5-star rating on Spotify. This helps other true crime connoisseurs find us. Follow us at Gruesome Podcasts on Instagram or TikTok and talk to us on our posts.
Join the Patreon. Sign up to join our True Crime Sticker of the Month Club and gain access to bonus episodes and exclusive Patreon perks. Or if a one-time donation is more your thing, we have a Venmo at Gruesome Podcast and a PayPal via our email, gruesomepodcast@gmail.com.
Speaking of which, we love hearing from you. It seriously makes our whole life. So send us your questions, comments, suggestions, or just ask our opinion on whether that person you met on Tinder is a serial killer or not.
Tune in next week, and don't forget, lock your windows, lock your doors, and on Wednesdays,
we're gruesome.
Bye.
Bye.